You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Kara St. Louis. Kara is a writer, teacher, activist, and speaker. She has been a journalist for Veterans Today and is the author of several books, including Consolata's Companion, about the dark side or archontic presence in our lives. And her second book is The Sun Thief, a thinly fictionalized thriller about the murder of her mother, who had a top Navy security clearance, and a pilot who steals a chemtrail plane. Her recent book, written with Harold Kautzvella, is titled Dangerous Imagination, Silent Assimilation. It's a paradigm-shifting book that flings the doors open to expose the vast, coordinated manipulations to control and dominate humanity. Currently, she is at work on two projects. One is the follow-up to Dangerous Imagination. It's called The Workbook, a series of standalone episodes. The first one is out, and it's called False History, The Great Remembering. She has a project on the Celtic Hearth with master dowser and monolith theoretician Maria Wheatley, who is the daughter of novelist Dennis Wheatley. She's a regular at international conferences, with one upcoming at the Basis Project in England. You can read her writings and sample chapters of her book at her website, www.vortexcourage.me. You can also find her on Facebook, too. So let's welcome her back to the show now. Hi, Kara, how are you?
Hi, Lance. I'm pretty good right now. I am extremely happy to be talking to you at this point because you're the first person I've talked to post lots of things going on. You're aware that it's hitting the fan all over the alternative community right now, I'm sure, because you keep your pulse on, or your finger on the pulse everywhere, as do most people in your position. For one thing, I have to correct a couple of things in the introduction. First of all, I'm not going to be speaking at Miles Johnston's International Conference.
Okay.
And the reason, maybe you don't realize this yet, but several weeks ago, Christine Hart, who was, is, and always will be an MI5 agent, and was someone who was wrapped up in the Rupert Murdoch newspaper phone tapping situation, subsequently, quote unquote, lost her job over it and all of that. Anyway, she is going to be speaking at the conference, and she's bringing Channel 4 and the BBC. Well, most of us, if not all of us, refuse to deal with mainstream media. If we haven't learned that lesson, Lance, I don't know what the hell we've learned.
Right.
So once I realized that the mainstream media was coming, I declined to attend. Because I didn't want, what I was going to do was roll out my new lecture on the Fae as a seed race, which is an extremely important lecture. And the last thing I really wanted was Channel 4 or the BBC getting a hold of it and making it, you know, just completely destroying it and destroying me in the process, which is what they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, the reality is a couple of years ago, Miles made the same damn mistake. And now he's been struggling ever since because he invited Channel 4 to some conference. And there were ET experiencers there who were literally ripped to shreds and made to look like complete idiots. So having the mainstream media again, I mean, it just beggars belief, doesn't it? It just staggers the imagination that he thought that was a good idea. And, you know, when one thinks about it and one comes up with several, you know, reasons that could be the case, and we could talk about that if you'd like, but the reality is then as soon as I declined to go on and I stated publicly why I was declining to go on, Miles is something of a notorious rageaholic, and he's been raging at me ever since. He took all my interviews down from bases and destroyed them.
Oh,
luckily,
gee.
Luckily I have fans who had them downloaded, so I have them now on my channel. And I wondered why he would get rid of all of my interviews. I mean, there's lots of things in there that,
yes, absolutely,
that are evidence, really.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Well, you know, sometimes I find that that rage or people that are in the position to, you know, get information out are manipulated by technologies that we really don't understand and we have no knowledge of.
Yeah.
We're just aware of it, and we know it exists, and it exists on many levels multidimensionally, but you don't see it. So it's something that when I look at somebody that's doing something in the public eye that's out of the ordinary and destroying information, I usually just assume that they are being, you know, manipulated by technologies that can reach an individual or a group and manipulate their thoughts and actions and so on.
Right. Yep. That's some of the
six, seven
jokes made to me was that obviously Miles has been activated or his, you know, this is an AI situation. And honestly, I think that regardless of the other things that I think are attached to all of this, that's probably actually the case, because no sooner had I stepped away from the bases sort of group, which I've been happily being part of for a couple of years, I felt like I was being hunted by the Borg all of a sudden.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I very much felt like AI was after me in a way, and it's really difficult to describe how you know that, because it's people coming out of the woodwork in various ways all of a sudden. Do you know what I mean? And you just know that this is an AI situation, and that somehow you've become a loose cannon. You know, I think once I was while I was in the Basis Project, I was a bit controllable, which makes me, you know, there's lots of things to wonder about Basis at this point. But at least I was being someplace where I could be watched, that kind of thing.
Right.
Once I stepped away from Basis, which it just stuns me that they thought I wouldn't do that based on what people should know about me by now. Then I was, like I said, then I was kind of a loose cannon. So then it was like Katie barred the door and stuff was hitting the fan. And, you know, people are outing themselves left, right, and center. I think this is Miles outing himself in lots of ways. And he continues to try to drag me through the mud. I just have to ignore it at this point. You know, that's the best thing I can do is just walk away from it and ignore it. But Simon Parks is under a tremendous amount of scrutiny right now. And of course, Max Spears just died. Max Spears just—he was actually killed. I'm certain of that.
Yes.
In Poland, I'm sure you're following that story as well as are we all. Max is not somebody that I particularly knew. We'd had some Facebook conversations, mostly because I kept seeing Max lecturing on my material. which is fine. I mean, in the last Basis I did, which was Basis 45 Part 4, I spent quite a chunk of minutes there talking about plagiarism and how, you know, we all bring our own stuff, and we also bring the research of other people, and we put it all together, and we try to make good presentations for people to enlighten them, to wake them up, and all of that. And that's just how it's done in academia.
Yeah.
It's how it's done everywhere. But you by God have to cite your sources. Do you know what I mean? You can't just take people's stuff and act like it's your own. It doesn't work that way. That's called plagiarism. And so I had a few words with Max about that. But that, you know, it was not the huge thing that people are making it out to be. Anyway, then I know that I'm right in the middle of this stuff in London, Lance. I know, for example, a week before he died or a week and a half before he died, he was at a conference with a bunch of reptiles. He was there with Miles. He was there with Simon. He was there with Harold Kautzbella. He was there with Carrie Cassidy. Kautzbella has surfaced again since I have new material. And so who else was he? Oh, Peter Padgett, Peter Padgett has been revealed to be a fake, which, you know, he seemed to be a fake all along anyway. But Peter Padgett is somebody that Miles uses constantly. And he has been done for, not extortion, but what is it? What is it they call it when you take money from the government? Welfare money.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, he was on the dole, and his name isn't even Peter Padgett. It's Peter Fisher. He's been on the front pages of the news. Well, he was on the front pages of the newspaper in 2014. So he's not who he says he is. Anyway, he got into it with Harold Koutsubela and stormed out. So I don't know if he's going to be part of the international conference. I also know from someone who works very closely with Miles that Miles had thrown Max Spears out of the conference for some nonsense that had been going on in a chat room and was refusing to take his calls. Now, that's pretty much a mess that I'm describing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
A big fat mess. And now I'm just going to put it away and I'm going to walk away from it. And I'm going to say, I'm very sorry that Max is dead. We all think that his death is massively suspicious. 2 days before he died, he was supposed to be interviewing with Christine Hart. And he couldn't make it because he had a massive migraine for both of those days. And then he collapsed and died in Poland. So that's where that's at. Now, that's causing most of us to reevaluate. Some of us are shaken and retreating a little bit. Some of us are just reevaluating what we're bringing and how strenuously we're bringing it and what's really important and all of that. But that was basically, as Randy Moggan said, that was a shot across the bow for all of us to consider. So it's been a hell of a week. It really has been a hell of a week, or a couple weeks. So I haven't talked to anybody, you lucky devil, since all this stuff started happening. Anyway, what did you want to talk about, Love Bunny?
Well, I want to talk about what you want to talk about.
Right now, go ahead.
Actually, when you brought up Poland, it did ring a bell because I have a guest, and he's one of my favorite people that comes on the show, Julian Rose, and he is a champion for the small farmer, and he's was able to get GMOs banned in Poland, and that was in the early 2000s, and since then, the EU has made inroads with, you know, buying politicians and this, that, and the other thing.
Right.
So, you know, when you get something done, it's, you know, one step forward and two steps back.
Yeah.
But he wrote an essay. He's a brilliant essayist and author. And he wrote one recently, just a few days ago, and it had to do with the increasing direction in Poland towards the takeover, the New World Order takeover and Third World War and so on and so forth. And he doesn't raise the red flag or the warning bells unless there's a reason. He has his finger on the pulse globally.
Right.
And that's what he's seeing there now. And he's been able to stave off, at least in the areas that he's concerned about. They want to uproot all the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And then the farmers all go to the large cities for work, and they don't know what to do because for hundreds of years they've been small farmers without fancy gadgets and devices that sterilize the milk and do this and that and the other thing that kill off all the good stuff well as the quote bad stuff and sterilize the farming operations. So that's a huge investment in money, and he's managed to stave it off, but it's really, they've turned up the heat.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
I think that's an old story, though. It's just that hitting Poland now, you know? Remember all stories in the United States of the rural folks having to go to the city and how awful that really was.
Yeah.
And, of course, Europe is now a bit of a complex, more of a complex situation because we've had Brexit and the UK, which was never really part of the EU. They were just sort of taking advantage of, you know, a lot of the stuff that they could take advantage of, but they kept the pound and they didn't, you know, all of those things. It's really quite a gravy train for Queen Elizabeth and her family more than anything. Although she's the one who's kind of behind getting Britain out of the EU. You could, you know, every once in a while there would be a quote unquote leak that, you know, Queen Elizabeth really wants us to leave and that kind of thing. Brexit's not a bad thing. It's difficult for any American to find to quarrel with wanting to be independent. We get that completely. But we get so dependent, you know, on our father government, mother government, that we don't know what to do instead. And so Brexit is a big topic of conversation over there. We also have a two-year, in England, they have a two-year sort of buyer's remorse clause. They can, I think they can change their mind anytime within the next couple of years. And so what that makes me wonder is if this
like
isn't just a massive scare tactic, you know, and England will go screaming back to the EU and never leave because they, you know, are frightened to death. Meanwhile, for example, the Duchy of Cornwall, which belongs to Charles, Prince Charles, has asked the British government, I think, for $60 million in reparations post-leaving Brexit for lost income and things like that. Well, that goes to Charles. So you see what a gravy train it all is from what, from beginning to end. I don't know. There's just a lot going on right now. So, but hey, listen, I've got, I'm on my way to Australia soon. I've finally gotten those lectures in place. I'll be in Melbourne and then I'll be up in Byron Bay, which is very interesting. And my second episode of the workbook is out. It's called The Fae. Oh gosh, what's the, it's episode two. The Fae When the Temple Burns.
And then, so Ron, one,
in my opinion and in my research, probably one of, if not the original seed race of the planet. So that makes that lecture huge. It's the one I was going to do for Miles. I'm not going to do anything for Miles anymore. But this is going out in Australia. So I'm looking forward to that. Very much looking forward to that.
Wonderful. Well, now, let's take a step back in with our microscope.
Okay.
And step out of the our earthly earthly solar system,
mm-hmm.
and take a peek from a larger perspective, and try to see what the galactic view might be, and what's going on at the levels of interdimensional activities.
Well, in my view, interdimensionally, there is a war going on, and there has been a war going on for a very long time. I think that there's always a battle going on interdimensionally. Sometimes, like right now, when things heat up and get really crazy, it's hand-to-hand combat. But, you know, a lot of what happens between one intergalactic, I guess you could say interdimensional species, and another happens on that level. We don't necessarily contend with it on a material level. We're always contending with it on an interdimensional level. The Fae, for example, this seed race that I discussed, that I feel very connected to, that I actually self-identify with and claim lineage from, is an absolute enemy of the Draco. And some of, it's why Simon Parks won't be in the same room with me ever. Some of my research, you know, my research comes from a fellow in Germany. Some of it comes from a fellow in Germany called Erhard Landmann. And I'm lucky enough that my husband does a lot of translating for me from the German, and the Germans are doing fine work right now. Mostly we just don't know about it. Everything that's happening for us in our visual spectrum, in our day-to-day lives, in our conscious day-to-day understanding, has to do with keeping us from the truth.
Right.
Everything has to do with keeping us from the truth, whether it is the behaviorally modified brainwashing schooling that we go through, which is really just training us to be robots, or whether it is the history that we have to contend with that is patently false. And I have, that's what the first episode is about. That was really just, they say history repeats itself, and they aren't kidding, man. That was 1,000 years that they made up over and over and over and over. And that was really just to allow these royal families that are ruling the planet right now time to come in and time to establish their history, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Somebody told me not too long ago that Queen Victoria had spent an inordinate amount of time tracing her lineage back to Jesus Christ. Well, for somebody like me, what that translates to is inventing her lineage back to the time
right.
of Jesus Christ, which according to most scholars in the non-English speaking world who are astronomers, statisticians, and mathematicians, the personage of Jesus the Christ would have been a medieval character anyway. So we don't really even know what year it is. I mean, talk about the Matrix. I watched the Matrix on an airplane the other day, again for the first time in a long time, because I thought, you know, I really need to look at that again and see how it's playing out in, you know, 20 years later or whatever. And here, you know, here's the guy saying, you know, we don't really know what year it is. The best we can come up with. And I'm thinking, you know, that's absolutely true. We do not know what year it is. So speaking galactically, we have interdimensional activity going on at all times. The Earth, in my view, in my estimation, in my research, is quite the prize, and so are human beings. I think, Lance, that we are unique in the universe. Mm-hmm. I think that we are absolutely unique in the universe. As you know, I have the great good fortune in a couple of weeks to sit down with Kavassalis and talk about some stuff. And I'm very much looking forward to that, because I think he's going to be able to shed some light on how unique we actually are in this universe.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we such a prize in this at this level? Why are we such a prize at this level? If we understand why we're such a prize, then we understand how amazing we are. And that's mm-hmm. important.
Yes, absolutely. That's right.
Most of what's been aimed at us, most of what's aimed at us right now, is simply meant to disempower us, numb us out, and convince us we have no power, we're useless, worthless, you know, weak and feeble, all of those things. It's a bloody horrible thing that's happened to us in the last, you know, few centuries. And I think the best thing that we can do is try to help each other come out from that. And that's speaking galactically. Kavassalis
yes.
says that too. Stop, you know, stop getting down on your knees for this crap, for God's sake. I mean, that's true. That's right. You know,
well,
whatever you think of the details, that's absolutely correct.
Well, I suspect that the opposite is true, because this everything is turned around backwards and upside down in this topsy-turvy world, in this Alice in Wonderland tunnel that we're in. And we can't see that we are actually far more advanced than those who would control us, because mm-hmm. if they need so badly to keep us under their thumb, then there's a very good reason why, and I think
right.
it's because we have the ability to create, and mm-hmm. so all of the things that are planted in this fake reality that we share
right.
are designed to get us to create the reality that they cannot create without us.
Right. That's what dangerous imagination, silent assimilation is about. In fact, I will probably spend the rest of my life lecturing about the imagination.
Oh,
because
yeah.
that is what we have that nothing else has. That is
yes.
our... We translate from the morphogenic field into the material plane via our imaginations.
Yes.
And I feel very strongly that the mechanism, if you want to put it that way, of our imagination lies between the astral and the higher self.
Yes,
You know, Rudolf Steiner talks about four sheaths. He talks about the physical, the etheric, the astral, and the higher.
Maybe you're wondering why your fingers...
Mm-hmm. The imagination, I believe, lies between the astral and the higher self.
Mm-hmm.
The
mm-hmm.
the entities who are trying to locate it, find it, use it, or use us to use it, haven't got the tools of perception to even see it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so they can't find it. They cannot
mm-hmm.
find it. Only thing they can do is try to sever our understanding of who we are, our confidence
mm-hmm.
in using that sort of thing, and maybe wreck our bodies in the process, that kind of, you know, and use us in that way. But the reality is they can't, even should it come to pass that they can control our bodies. Now, listen, that's what chemtrailing is all about. Everything. I'm getting ready to do a new lecture on chemtrailing in Melbourne. I haven't done a lecture on chemtrailing in a very long time, but there are so many deep esoteric components to it. This is one of the decisions that I've made very deeply in the wake of the death of Max Spears, is that I'm bringing everything I have to bear on these conversations. And a lot of that is the esoteric stuff, mm-hmm. which one tries to sort of, you know, tone down sometimes, because you're trying to reach people, you know, you're not trying to blow them out of the water. But
right.
at this point, I think it's time to open up both barrels and say, yeah. and tell it like it is, because it all boils down to them trying to capture the essence of who we are.
Yeah.
Whether it's, yeah, everything, all of it, every single solitary aspect of this full spectrum attack, assault on us right now. So we are living in this belief system, and it's in this belief system that they're trying to control us. So that's where I'm putting my effort right now, and everything is about the imagination, every single solitary bit of it. There's you know, I'm assuming that you, it seems to me like you have a pretty good handle on the artificial intelligence effort on this, mm-hmm. On this planet, in this sphere, this material plane. Mm-hmm. There is an organic hologram, if for lack of a better word, and there's an inorganic hologram.
Right.
There is duality, that is one and two and binary and lifeless, and that is artificial intelligence.
Right.
There is an organic hologram, and that is what we create, and we are all of the numbers. We are not binary. We are not binary. They would like to cut us off right there and convince
yeah.
us that duality is what matters, and in fact, it's the polarity. There is a difference between duality and polarity.
Oh,
male
yeah.
and female is a polarity. It's not a duality. Okay?
Absolutely.
What I would like to get to, Lance, is waking up from the waking up. I would like now to have a gander, an interaction with the organic hologram again. And I think that the differences in frequency, how they've changed the way we resonate or don't resonate to the planet, the way they've changed the plasma of the atmosphere in which we walk around. I mean, this has made it so that what we see is their hologram, not ours, you know?
Yes, yes. And of course, the technology is designed to bury us, literally, in an electronic smog and a virtual reality, which is the part of the transhumanist agenda and the virtual reality that they are literally putting us into, or are encouraging us to enter through cell phones and, you know, televisions
right.
weren't enough. You know,
right,
it
right.
wasn't enough that we just gazed at the tube for, you know, 12 hours a day. Now, we all just pretty much have cell phones. I was told that I was like an old fossil because I don't text. I said, well,
you don't text,
I don't
yeah.
need to.
Right, right.
So,
well,
yeah.
Well, this is, you know, you're talking about plasma screens now, which is really, really important to talk about. That goes, one of the conversations that I tend to have right now when I lecture about the false chronology,
mm-hmm.
One of the ways that we've discovered, and in non-English speaking countries, there is a very aggressive lashing out against this false chronology, this history that we live in that's so bogus.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the ways that that was discovered, sort of beyond a shadow of a doubt, was via standard astronomy, spherical astronomy, okay? And statistics and mathematics, and you know, but mostly it was astronomy. As that gained momentum, this idea that the chronology was patently false, and that centuries and centuries had been inserted in our timeline that actually didn't exist, all of a sudden we've got things like the flat Earth theory. Well, it seems to me that if your house of cards is falling down based on standard spherical astronomy, then job one is to discredit standard spherical astronomy. And so the flat Earth is clearly, to me, a PSYOP, a CIA PSYOP for sure. And it also pushes us back down to 2D, which we're trying to, they're trying to do anyway, by having us stare at a damn screen all the time, a plasma screen. We're very, very used to now things being 2D, so an acceptance of this idea that the world, that the Earth is flat, wouldn't be, you know, much of a leap for a lot of people. And in fact, it's spherical astronomy that proves that the chronology is wrong. So, you know, that's where that's every time I lecture now, I actually start off my lectures with by saying, you know, I'm not here to argue the toss about the flat Earth. So,
right.
The thing about that kind of argument is you can tell, I feel, that you can tell when something is a massive psyop by just how enraged people get by their side of the argument.
A good point.
Yeah. The flat earthers will tell you, I mean, even people like Santos Bonacci, whom I used to really admire, they will tear you limb from limb, verbally, if you don't. You know, if you resist this flat Earth theory, so I don't know. Are you a flat Earther, Lance? Am I treading on your toes?
Not really, but there is something kind of interesting that was seeded by that, because they seed all these ideas years in advance, and Gene Roddenberry did a series that we never saw. It was something he had written and had not completed, but his son picked up the ball and finished it, and it was a series about a race that comes in that's benevolent. And, of course, we know that they're extremely crafty and that privately they're manipulating everything in their favor. But one of the interesting things about this series that occurred, I think it's about 15 years old now, is that they had a cafe called Flat Earth Cafe.
Oh,
and
my God.
That was a long time ago. So here we are.
Yeah. Here we are. These are entities that think in terms of centuries, and we don't think in terms of centuries. This is long-term planning, long-term planning over a population that's been trained to think in 30-second blurbs.
Yeah.
You know? We have to stop that. We have to realize that they are doing this in terms of centuries of planning.
Mm-hmm. And the good news is that even though our lifespans appear to be short, and I don't think that the essence or the spirit that we are ever goes anywhere. There is no birth or death. But above that, we have an added advantage in that we can come in quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And like a fairy tale about the giant that, you know, falls on the ground and the Lilliputians tie him down and all that. Well, we can become aware and we can make changes that are really rapid where they can't, because their plans are so much larger, and they have a little bit of hubris, probably, maybe a lot, in thinking that, you know, everything's under control. And, you know, the Matrix is running fine. And enough of us can get together and silently and quietly do what we do, and there will be an instant when things will just shift. And I think that instant is coming, that moment.
I do too. I think that that's what all this craziness out in the world. Well, I mean, it's just extra added craziness, but it seems like amongst the activist community, it's gotten very heated and very crazy right now. So I think that, yes, we are hurtling, you know, pell-mell toward that point. I think I agree with you completely on that. But what do you see? I mean, I'm really interested, Lance, because in getting your opinion, because I know that it was an interesting sort of thing that you brought to back up and get some perspective and look at things from the galactic perspective. So what do you see when you look at all of this from the galactic perspective? I'm really interested.
Well, it seems that it's hard to think about, because we're so used to thinking in duality. But if you think multidimensionally and you use your imagination to create levels beyond levels beyond levels, there's always a higher level. And those levels are unseen by the lower levels. So whatever's going on at the level of battle and, you know, the kind of 3D non-spiritual service to self kind of thing, there are going to be forces that we are not able to see because they are, they can't get entangled in the quantum field. They're not in the quantum field. And if you step into it, so to speak, then you are entangled. And once you're entangled, then that's, you are changing things, and they can't really do that. So those changes have to be made outside of the realities that we are contemplating. And I think that there are many realities beyond fifth density, and this whole push to go to 5D is just a another psyop, which is a limitation to keep us embroiled and enmeshed in the matrix, which is nine-dimensional. And so, you know, if you can try to imagine being outside of the nine dimensions, that we're then you start to become, you start to get some traction. But there are so many guardians of the gates that, you know, there's just no entrance. And then, of course, the body and the lower bodies are reincarnated because they contain the energy that is needed to siphon off by those who are siphoning it on many levels.
The parasitic predator. Well, it's interesting that you use the word density, because I think that's a very important, aspect of our lives that we don't consider. We really don't consider the density of our environment. And one of the things that's going on with Keming is changing our changing the plasma around us in very distinct ways, altering the frequencies so that we don't resonate with the entities or the planet, for example, that we live on right now, in the way that we used to, in the way that we should. There's two things that actually were coming to mind when you were speaking. One was the density, which I'll return to in a second. The other thing was you kept using the word imagination or imagine. And that's very important as well, because, Lance, if we can imagine something different, that's all we need to do. All we need to do is be able to imagine something different, and it happens, and that's how powerful we are. So, you know, this is why that goes back to everything. This is why the Prussian soldiers walked away from the front line at the Battle of Jena, because they could imagine not dying. They could imagine a different, do you know what I mean? This is what we have that no other entity has. We have the imagination. It's a massive, mighty, mighty, mighty tool and a mighty cosmic weapon. So the other, but let's talk about this density, for example. You know, there are other, there's a more immediate way to look at density if you think about the chemtrailing. Victor Schauberger, right around 1900, talked about the atmosphere. He was a great friend and colleague of Rudolf Steiner, and they used to do a lot of, they used to talk a lot. And he did a great deal of work on atmospheric physics and also on water. Water is primarily what he was working on, and if you get a chance to read Schauberger's work, it's well worth your time. But Schauberger contended that we need an atmosphere in order to see anything. Without an atmosphere, we cannot see. If that, and that's in the visual sense, that very limited visual range that we have. If you change the density of our atmosphere, surely, Lance, you're changing what we can or cannot see. Therefore, therefore, We all talk about the things that are around us all the time that we cannot see. All right, well, if it's in any parasite or predator's best interest to somehow change the plasma for various reasons, what's going on right around us, Lance, that we can't see anymore?
Yes, well, you know, I remember as a kid when the weather, I mean, this has just happened within my lifetime. That, and the speed of it is really on in high gear, because the technologies that exist are so far beyond anything that we're aware of. We know that the technologies exist. We know that there's a breakaway civilization that can leave, come and go. And we know that there are bases on many of the planets, the Moon and Mars and probably most of the other ones. And there are alliances with various extraterrestrials that are of a negative source. So all of that stuff is obvious to us, but you know, when you start talking about it to the general public, then you, well, you really can't, because they're mired in the matrix. And
right.
But
right, but that's my decision lately, is just screw it. I don't care anymore. I'm just saying.
Oh, right.
Right. You know what I mean? It's like, no. I mean, because for a long time, and I think legitimately, my goal was to try to reach as many of the general public as I could. That's why I wrote The Sun Thief the way I wrote it. But now I think that things have gotten a bit more urgent, you know.
Yes.
And what I bring to the table is a lot of esoterics. So I'm going to bring them to the table at this point, you
good.
Know.
Good.
Gosh, there was something I was going to say, and I can't remember. Keep talking, because it'll come back to me.
Okay, well,
okay.
I'm in the same boat.
Right.
I got off on the tandem, and then I think I'm on the edge of the tree, and the branch is about to break.
Oh, no. Okay, all right.
I'll land on a feather bed.
Oh, I know what I was going to say.
Okay, good.
It was about
all right.
The fae. You know, the fae is a very, this is a topic that's very close to my heart. Because when we incarnate, we have a plan, basically. We come for a reason. We come with tools. We come with free will, so that we could, if we wanted to, opt for the very boring choice of not, you know, taking up our task and moving forward with it, which is one of the reasons we become ill and depressed. But when I got this information from Erhard Lendmann in Germany, it was as if every post-it note that I put all over myself when I was born suddenly made sense. You know what I mean? And I kind of knew another one of the things that I was going to be talking about. The Fae is an interesting race. The Fae is interesting because it's intradimensional and interdimensional. And I've often talked about those differences without realizing what I was headed for. But the Fae are two things. They're a seed race that come from a planet in the Big Dipper. And they are also intradimensional in the sense that part of them, at least, have become married to this planet in ways that we don't quite understand anymore, in the sense that they really are part of this planet.
Mm-hmm.
You could call it fading into, you could call it, I mean, a lot of religions talk about great spirits who came to this planet and merged themselves with the planet, and that's with Sophia, and that's actually, you know, a fairly decent way to describe what I'm trying to talk about. Now, having said that, I will say that these particular entities are coming back to a consciousness they have not been located at for a very long time, and that has to do with Sophia, the threat to this planet that breathes, this entity that we live on that lives and breathes,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
is just as incarnated in this matrix as we are.
Mm-hmm.
And they are coming to the aid of Sophia. They are coming to the aid of Sophia. Now, I did an interview not too long ago where the fella asked me, well, okay, but we can't see the Fae. Why, if you have good intentions for the planet, for humanity in particular, why stay hidden? I don't think they're staying hidden. I don't think that's it at all. I think we can't see them anymore because of the changes in the plasma, number one.
Right.
And
right.
number two, they're here to take care of the apple tree. The
right.
apple is going to be fine. They're here to deal with the tree. And that, and of course, this is the metaphor I'm using for the planet and humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know that we can ever take an off-world species or an interdimensional species and sort of assume that they have the same sets of morals and ethics. And
right.
You know what
right.
I mean? It just doesn't work like that. These
no,
are
it doesn't.
Things that we created for ourselves based on natural law, for sure. But, you know, so anyway, this is another topic that I'm talking about, and it's interesting to try to suss out this species that's both inter- and intradimensional. There may be two different, in fact, there almost certainly are two different strains, I guess, is a way of putting it, of the Fae. And I often, for lack of a better way to describe it, describe them as the good fairies and the bad fairies.
Right.
So,
right.
Because
yes,
this is
I was just
one
thinking
of the,
that.
Yeah, though this is one of the battles that's been going on for time immemorial, okay? There is a battle that I'm meditating on, learning about, investigating, called the Battle of Moytura. The Battle of Moytura happened in Ireland near Sligo, modern-day Sligo. And it's the one that talks about the Fomoran race that came either across the sea or from under the sea, and eventually on that island of Ireland met the Tuatha De Danann, who were probably the Atlanteans. Now, those who came across the sea or from under the sea, the Lemurians, were Lemurians, okay? They were from the water, and in the Lemurian epic, we were not corporeal. We were misty. We were watery. We were not solid like we are now, okay? They came across, the Lemurians came across, landed there, and, you know, if you listen to the Bardic tales, they say did battle with the Tuatha De Danann, but, you know, when we use the word do battle now, I hesitate to say that that's what it means for them. They encountered each other for sure, okay? And they may just be talking about the evolution from one thing to the next thing when they talk about Lemurians versus Atlanteans. One of the things that I talk about quite a bit in both of the episodes, but particularly in the first episode, is a woman called Sylvia Ivanova. She talks about the Atlanteans being with us up until the even a couple of hundred years ago. And she makes a massively good case for that, Lance. Her site is called newearth.com, I think. It's New Earth, and one word, N-E-W-E-A-R-T-H. And you can find it on YouTube. Start with the first video, please. Don't start with the last video. I've got people freaking themselves out by doing that. Start with number one and work your way through. And she makes a hell of an argument for the Atlanteans being present up to a couple of hundred years ago.
Interesting.
It is very interesting. And this is the first episode, which was the culmination of about 1,000 pages of research and watching 42 videos. And I boiled the episode down to about 50 or 60 pages just so that people can get, I mean, this seems to be my purpose. You know,
YouTube channel?
NewEarth.com or New Earth or my episode? No, this
Your
is
episode.
A book. This is a book. I'm calling them episodes because episode is actually a literary term that was stolen by the television.
Right.
And I'm taking it back.
Good.
So the workbook is a series of episodes, which are actually chapters. Okay. Two of the chapters are out. They are standalone. And they are so intense in their subject matter that it's good to encounter each episode as a single thing. They're also inexpensive to buy that way. And in the end, the workbook will probably end up being 500 or 600 pages long, but it's about a year away from being completed because I would assume there will be 6 or 7 or 8 episodes. I've got, you know, this panorama of ways in which we have been captured and contained. Yoke that we need to throw off, and it's all very radical, Lance. It's all very, very radical, but we need radical thinking, because if you're like me, this world, the way it is right now, it's untenable. There's no point in being in this hologram anymore.
Right.
There is. We all know. We get to the point for eons. We've gotten to the point now where it's been like, is this it? Seriously, is this it?
Yeah.
You do. It's this joke anymore. That's because it's such a stereotype, but it's real. It's real. This absolute knowing that nothing, that it's all wrong.
Yeah.
And it's not why we're here. So it's time to get radical and throw this all off.
I agree. I totally agree. I mean, there's hardly a moment that goes by that I don't have that feeling.
Yeah.
And you know, especially going out into. Out of nature and into the cities, that's always a disturbing reminder.
Right. Well, plus, I mean,
That gets back to the Fae, too, doesn't it? Because as I understand it, they are, they're elementals and divas and so on and so forth.
Depends on how you look at it. They could be, I mean, I'm also sort of in the process of trying to suss that out. Elementals and Fae are not the same thing.
Okay.
And that is right. Something that Walt Disney has helped purvey. That is something that they've been relegated to this very not impotent but reduced, or I can't find the right word for it yet. The Fae are the okay. It's a feminine sort of gesture. Okay.
Hey, right.
there are stories in every culture about women in white, or you know, women who appear, and sometimes they're seen as negative, and sometimes they're seen as positive. This also goes to the apparitions of Mary. That's what that is. That is an app. This is a viewing of the Fae. Okay.
Do you think could be mistaken as angels, or considered labeled as angels?
Could be. They could be. I think that anytime there is a legend of a female apparition in a culture, this is the Fae. I think it's very important. One of the symbols I came across recently that I think that people should equate, understand that they should equate with the Fae, very much. I've said this before. The Fae do battle with Draco. The Fae and the Draco are opposite ends of the spectrum, and they are mortal enemies. The Draco is here to absorb the earth, rip it up, rip it to shreds, eat it, chew it up, spit it out. You know,
right?
And the Fae are here to as shepherds to this breathing planet. Now, there is often a symbol that you can see, whether it's a painting or a drawing or whatever, of the Virgin Mary standing atop a planet with a snake under her feet and 12 stars gathered around her head. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah.
12 stars, of course, being the planets in our solar system, the Earth, and the female standing on the Earth in bare feet, always in bare feet, very obvious, and the snake, Draco, under her feet. The Fae vanquishing Draco. That's what that is. Another thing that leads you to understand how important the Fae are to this planet and to our history is that, like I said, the planet they came from, is at the bottom left corner of the Big Dipper, which is a circumpolar constellation in front of Ursa Major. It's not part of Ursa Major. It's actually in front of Ursa Major. Anyway, it's called Phecda, Phecda. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's not too far from Draco. Anyway, that constellation of the Big Dipper appears to revolve around Polaris every year. And as it goes through its revolutions, it forms a swastika.
Huh. Interesting.
Now I ask you, Lance. Is this planet covered? Is this planet freaking covered in ancient cultures till now with swastikas? And it's only been in the 20th century that became a negative symbol.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, of course, all the other divine and esoteric symbols have been reversed as well.
Exactly.
And then you picked up by corporations and the media and advertising. I mean, it's so subliminal that it's not even subliminal anymore. They're just right out in the open with it.
Right, right. So think of an etymology. One of the investigations I go in episode 2, which is the second chapter of the workbook, is the etymological examination of how the Fae have affected our speech in English. And think of all the words that have a P-H-E in them. Think of all the words that have an F-E. F-E is iron. Now, Lance, do the fairies have a relationship with iron? I mean, supposedly iron is what you use to ward off the fairies, is it not? In these folk tales in Ireland. But F-E is Fae. F-E in the periodic table of elements means iron. Fae means iron. P-H-E in so many words. F-E-Y, Morgan Le Fay, half-sister of King Arthur. And F-A-E, my personal favorite, because it speaks to the divine feminine aspect of the Fae. The other thing that, I mean, just on a personal level, you remember that as I was, the day I finished writing The Sun Thief, which was March 31st into April 1st, 2012, at midnight, straight up midnight, which is also when I was born, my house burned down. Do you remember?
Oh, my.
Did I not say that to you? Yeah, my house burned down. And
wow.
I ran back into the house to save the thumb drive that was in my computer that had the book on it. And, yeah, I guess I didn't tell you that story. Well, guess what, Lance? The day I finished writing The Sound Thief, my house burned down. It was the
Yeah, well, that was no accident.
No, that was no accident. It was one event in many as I was writing that book to let me know that I was on the right track in terms of, you know, being suspicious of the way my mother died. So anyway, regardless, that was the crescendo for me.
I guess so.
Two of my children were out of town. One of them was on the third floor where the fire started. My ex-husband got him out, got me out, we got the book out, we got the dogs out, we got the cats out, you know, and lost everything that we owned, but we went on to live our lives. And that's, however, the thing that's important about that when it comes to talking about the Fae is that my house was on Temple Street in this little town in Maine. And not too long, at the time I was working with two initiates in the United States, two very powerful initiates in the United States. And one of the things that I recalled at that time was that Rudolf Steiner had said that when the temple burns, the door to Ephesus opens. Ephesus was a mystery school. And if you take that word apart, Ephesus, it boils down pretty easily to we are from the Fae or I am from the Fae. So when the temple burns, the door to Ephesus opens. Now, I knew that, kept it in my side pocket as I went on through my years doing other things. But when the Fae appeared in my life, I knew that that's what that meant. Etymologically, signs of the Fae are cover this planet. The swastika covers this planet as a symbol of where we are from on some level. Okay, this Fae is a seed race, and one of the primary goals of messing with us over the last couple of centuries was to keep us from knowing that, to keep us from remembering that, to keep us from understanding that we are that close to Atlantis, just a couple of centuries away, and from all of the amazing and mighty things that the Atlanteans represent.
Right.
Who are the Fae, by the way? So, there you go. A very important subject.
Yes, it is. And the interesting thing is that, you know, it brings us all back to Ireland. And Michael Tesserian wrote a series of books on the Irish origins of civilization. So there's a lot focusing on Ireland as being the source of everything way back when.
Yeah, it certainly could be. I mean, we still have to figure out where the Celtic hearth is. This is the project I'm working on with Maria Wheatley. There is some evidence that it's actually from the mouth of the Danube. That's where the Tuatha De Danann came from, but we don't know yet, and it will be revealed to us. It will very soon. I'm sure of that.
Yes, I think so too. One of the things that came up while we were talking was something that I've seen. That you know quite a bit about, and it seems to be seeded a lot in a commercial and in various movies, and it is probably something that has already been developed and probably existed here already, and that is programmable matter, and it's a black substance
the goo
that can shape itself via thought. And it's supposed to have some kind of a life force of its own. Now, if you go back to the black goo ideas, and that's something that came from asteroids 80,000 years ago that the military has been messing with. But do you want to say anything about that? Or?
Well, there's not a lot to say about it. This was Harold Kaltzvella's area of expertise, and I'm not sure where the research has led. He's been off the radar for about 10 months now. I don't know what he's been researching. So, you know, when you're saying the black goo and you're saying that it's sort of semi-sentient and you're saying that it can form itself into shapes and things, what I'm thinking in my head is, well, this is the lifeless co-creator then, isn't it? This is AI. This is AI forming itself, copying, replicating.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a replication.
Yes,
it's not real. It's not enlivened. This is what human beings do. That we enliven things.
Yes,
and that's
yes.
lifeless. It can copy
yes.
things. It can replicate
it
things.
It can't it's create.
No, it's scary. I think, but it can't create. I think this is part of the artificial intelligence. Now, a lot of people do talk about our computer systems, our computing networks being possessed in a way by
right.
this stuff. I think that certainly could be the case. I think that's one of the things that we have to be especially careful about, because when we're interacting with the plasma in our computer screens, it's interacting with us. We just have to make sure that we can unplug and step away. But when we do that, like I just did, be prepared to be chased by the Borg, okay? Because they don't like that. And I think that this is what you're talking about when you're talking about the black or the, what are we going to call it? Sentient oil? The black goo?
Say that again?
What are we going to call it? Are we calling it sentient oil? Or are we calling it black goo? Or?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I don't know. I think I like your definition of it. And I think there could be another... it was also foreshadowed in the X-Files.
Yeah, I know.
It was black gold. It was black oil in that series. And that mm-hmm. was something that they really focused on for quite a few episodes, where
right.
the little kid goes down into the cavern, and this black oil starts coming up through his body, and the eyes turn black, and... You know,
yeah.
they're telling us something.
Yeah.
There's a
message
there.
Well, it's demonic, then. If the eyes are turning black in a situation like that, that signifies a demonic.
Yes, yes. Now, Kara,
yeah.
I hate to have to say this, but we're just about out of time. And we're just getting on a roll.
That's okay. We can do it again.
We will do it again. I love talking to you.
Yeah, there's a whole story next time I'll tell you about the black goo, because it showed
wonderful.
Showed up in The Sun Thief, and I didn't even know it was in there. It was a vision I had. My mother gave me this vision of the black goo, and so it's something of a personal story as well, but it validates its existence and all of that stuff. But Lance, thank you so much for taking the time to have me while I'm in the States. It's so much easier than it is when I'm in England.
Well,
thank
you, Cara, for coming back. I love talking to you, and you're one of my favorite guests. So
anytime
you want to come back, you just say the word, and you're back.
Oh, you're so sweet.
I will be raging at you.
I'll be in and out of the States quite a bit, so we'll do a bunch of them, okay?
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Cara.
Thanks, Lance. You have a good one, right?
You too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.